I do know who you are. I do know what I want. We have a very particular set of skills. Skills we've acquired over a certain amount of time. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. So I will find you, and I will interview you for the Gaffer Tapes.
State your name and record.
Ian Evatts, caretaker manager of Chesterfield for 3 games, manager of Barrow AFC for 18 months.
And welcome to it. And this is a bit different for me because everyone I've interviewed up till now I've known or have come across sort of this way, but we were keen to get someone from up north because the show's based down here, and sort of who better to get than a guy sitting at the top of the National. So it's safe to say we don't know each other because there's guys who I have known, and I like the people to know that whether I know them or don't know them in case they feel it's being set up in any way or whatever. So that's that out of the way.
Okay.
I'd like to start at the start, and we'll jump about a bit. We'll go into your playing career at times. We've plenty of time to do that. But my first thing is that struck me was some people do a little bit of an apprenticeship. Some people go straight into it. Some people know they're going to go into it. So if I was to phone someone who knows you well, would they say to me, yeah, I knew you'd be a manager?
Yeah, I think they would probably from 30 onwards. I think I matured a lot as a player and a captain over the years. And I think from probably the age of 30 onwards, it was my destiny to be a manager. Before then, I was very much, you know, Jack the Lad. Didn't even think about the end of my career. It was just living for the here and now. And at those points, there were some really high points of that as a player. So I never really...
The highest ones? What was it?
Obviously playing in the Premier League. I played in the Premier League at 17 for Derby. Then went out of it, had some adversity to deal with. And then built my way back up and got there again with Blackpool winning the playoff final.
Yeah.
Massive high points. And when you're in that bubble, you don't think about anything else. It's when that bubble starts to burst and you get to 30 and you're thinking, you know, I'm starting to get these aches and pains now. What am I going to do next? And then the badges came. I started, you know, really, you know, writing down and thinking about what I'd like to do.
Yeah. We've plenty of time to cover. This is a bit what we're sort of saying is that we normally do interviews and we have to go like that.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, we don't. So when you say, you know, you when you hit 30 and you thought, I've got to... Did a light bulb go off? Was it a slow thing? Was there another manager who you worked under? Where did that... Can you remember when you actually... was it a gradual thing?
I think the biggest wake-up call for me was coming towards the end of my Blackpool career. And yeah. We'd just been beat in the playoff final by West Ham, the last minute of the playoff final, in 2013. And then the summer I was due to move to Southampton for big money. Blackpool turned it down, so I decided, you know, I was going to start to let my contract run out at the end of the season and hopefully move then. 2 months later, I had a really serious knee injury. And then at the end of that season, I was released. So it went from, still injured. So it went from literally moving to Southampton for life-changing sums of money to having no club. And I went from being a Premier League top Championship defender to playing in League Two for Chesterfield in the space of a year. And it was really then that I thought to myself, right, what's next? You know, I've always been involved in football from young. You know, I've had the stereotypical career through academies, and I wanted to stay in the game. I'd learned so much off various types of managers. I had to then.
Who, you know, and it's something that we, I think we're all influenced by people. You know, we mightn't admit to some of them. Someone might teach us how not to do it, but you've played under a lot of top managers. You know, who, just bits and bits. I don't expect you to recite every one of them, but the ones that sort of stick with you, that you think like that.
Yeah. So as a kid, just getting in a first team at Derby, it was Jim Smith.
No, Baldy.
Yeah, so Jim Smith, you know, was one of the managers that you were scared to death of.
Very much old school. Yes, absolutely. Real old school.
You know, I used to be scared to talk to the fella, let alone anything else. Very early on in my career, I had him, I had John Gregory, then I had moved to Chesterfield for the first time and had Roy McFarland, you know, old school, proper old school fellas who'd had, you know, Roy especially, had a great career.
Unbelievable career, yeah.
Then it kind of transitioned and the game kind of started to move on. And then Ian Holloway was obviously a huge influence for me. Different, he signed me at QPR, was complete opposite to what he was at Blackpool, you know.
So you had him at Blackpool as well?
I had him at Blackpool
and
as well.
And when you say different, in what way?
So when I went to QPR, he was so intense, like 4-4-2, smash it in the channels. You know, everything that I detested about the game, really. And that stayed that way. And then he gets the Blackpool job and you think, oh, here we go again. But it had completely transformed. He wanted to play right out from the back. It was attacking, it was expansive, it was enjoyable to play in as a centre-half even.
Yeah.
And it was just a massive difference. And then you kind of...
Did you ever speak to him about why, what that was about?
Yeah. Spoke to him a lot of times about it. I think he left QPR and went to Plymouth, was successful in that mould, then went to Leicester, got sacked, hated it, and thought, oh, I'm doing something wrong, like I need to change something. What can I do to change people's, you know, what they think about me and how I see the game? And then I think he went away, studied Barcelona, came up with a plan of how he wanted to play, what he wanted to do. But the biggest thing for me was mentality with him. The biggest thing that I learned from him, probably from any manager, was mentality and about changing not only the psychological aspect of the player's mind, but the whole club, the fans. You know, getting them on board and getting them believing that we're not just happy to make numbers up here, we want to go and achieve something.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd say more than anything else I've done about it.
Yeah, and I remember me, he played, my best mate was a guy called Al McDonald, God bless him, he's no longer with us.
Yeah,
he was a centre half.
Yeah.
And so I know Ian from when he played in that very successful QPR side. And that's and because I wanted to come on to that, and I'll come on to it now, and we'll jump around because I'm not trained at this, we just do it the way we do it.
Yeah.
But reading about the way your team plays now, you don't sound like a centre half manager, if you know what I mean, you know, because your team's, you know, are expansive, you know, you play modern age football, if you want to call it whatever you want to call it, but certainly like I'm a dinosaur, it scares me to death, that football, you know. And I said to you before we started recording that let's see what you're like in 10 years if you still got that, and hopefully you will have. But is that where that came from? Where, because as centre half, you think of centre half certainly at the time you play it, if you don't make me sin, as win your headers, win your tackles, be big strong, which you certainly are.
Yeah.
So where does the expansive stuff come from?
I think it's a strange one. Everyone looks at me and I'm 6'3", you know, big lad, was dominant aerially and as a defender. But growing up as a kid, it was kind of ingrained into me from Derby. Derby had a fantastic academy. And as a young player, I had the best coaches. Steve McLaren was Jim Smith's assistant.
As a kid
growing up from the age of 11 till 17, I had a guy called Steve Round who ended up being England's coach, and he's now assistant manager to Mikel Arteta at Arsenal. So I had top coaches as a young player. And I was always quite technical. For a big lad, I was always quite technical, and I really enjoyed the technical side of the game. And even playing under Ollie for Blackpool, which we would flood 8-9 men forwards and would be left 1v1, 2v2 at the back, it was bloody hard work, and we conceded a lot of goals, but I really enjoyed playing them.
Yeah.
And one thing he always said to me was, this is an entertainment industry, football. You know, these fans pay a lot of money to come and watch people play. They've got to, if they're paying their hard-earned money, they've got to enjoy what they're watching. And for me, there's nothing more enjoyable than seeing teams score goal after goal and attack, you know, free-flowing, fearless football. And that's, you know, there's going to be a stage where that's my downfall, but at the minute, you know, that's really what I want to do.
Yeah, and well, at the minute, so it's actually going all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
There'll be a few more people listening to this thinking they're going to go with it. And sort of when you talk about that's how you want to do it, and you know, you look into your staff because it's your first major job, it's your first job, and to be where you are. And we'll talk about what your experience as a player will mean going into the last bit. But I always find my staff a big thing. You know, you have to get if you get the right staff, you have to, how do you, and I know Peter Athelton is your assistant, and where's that relationship come from? Is it some?
It's such a strange one. But I was born and raised in Coventry, so yeah. I was a season ticket holder at Coventry for many years. And Pete used to play, obviously, for Coventry.
Yes.
So I didn't know Peter, and this was my biggest thing, the best decision I ever made. I thought about it long and hard, and I could have easily gone with a mate, you know, someone I know that was transitioning out the game like me, someone I trust.
Yeah.
But would they be willing to say no to me? Probably not. I didn't want a yes man.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted someone who was calm and experienced, but shared the same views of football as me. So I basically interviewed.
Did you?
I basically interviewed, and I had a list of points that I thought were important to me.
Did you advertise the job? Did you advertise it, or did you just...
In the football circle, yes.
You just put the feelers out for if anybody's interested.
So I interviewed 7 or 8 people.
Wow, that's totally different, isn't it? You don't hear... obviously, the gaffer gets the job through the interview, but then he employs his staff. So that's really different, isn't it?
Very. And like I said, the minute I met Peter and we sat down and we spoke for half an hour, I just knew that it was going to work. I just knew. He shared the same values. But as a character, obviously, character references of people I know in the game.
Yeah.
But he's so calm and composed. And I knew the kind of guy I am. I wear my heart on my sleeve. That's all I've always been. I knew I'd be like that. And I needed someone just, you know, Ian, come on, think about this, calm down.
Yeah.
What about this? Have you thought about this?
Yeah.
And he was perfect for that.
But you have to be, that's brilliant on his part, but as a manager, you have to be open to receive that stuff. You know, because I've worked for managers who, in the end, you go, I'm not going to tell him because he doesn't listen. I've worked for managers who make you feel as if you're the manager. They open it up to you and they tell you. Did you always want to be like that, open to where when the door's shut, he can say what he wants?
As a manager, you know yourself, everything falls at your door.
Yeah.
You know, so the most information that I can take in, the better for me, the more informative decisions I can make.
Yeah.
And the more information I've got, I can think about it, sit down, and then I can make my own decision with the help of Peter and other staff. I mean, my other staff are all young lads.
And what are that? What's I saying? If you're an analyst and you've tried to go that way with it, which goes back to what you said, you're a student really of the game, for want of a better description.
Yeah.
So you've brought them in to, one, probably cheap, two, to do a job that you feel... So who else is on the staff?
So Lewis Duckmanson is my analyst. I knew him from Chesterfield. Again, a young lad, came straight out of, you know, college, university, worked with the first team at Chesterfield. But he's not just an analyst. Like, he's very good at that side of the game.
Yeah.
And I can ring him at no matter what time of day and say, can you do this for me, this for me? And he'll do it.
Yeah.
But he's also great around the lads. He's a young lad, 22 years old. You know, the lad's really... like him as a character, he's a big character.
So
it's important that he's like the in between me, Peter, the players.
Yeah, you've got to have a buffer.
He feeds off them and feeds off us, and he's kind of the go between. And then the physio is Callum. Again, he was at Chesterfield. He was the trainee. He's not fully qualified yet, but he's got the qualification to be able to work in the National League. He's working on finishing off for the Football League, hopefully. Again, a young lad for cheapness, but also someone I'd worked with, so I trusted him.
And
I knew he was good at his job.
Yeah, and I think the players pick up on that stuff quickly, don't they? They pick up if the physio's good, that he becomes their best mate because they trust him, you know, and that's, I think, it's massive with it. See, I feel, you know, my initial reactions is, listen, I'm talking to a very experienced footballer, but I feel like I'm talking to a very experienced manager, and you've been in it for 20 minutes.
Type thing, if you know what I mean.
So, if you go, you get the borrow job, a couple of games of Chesterfield, but more as a sort of appetizer, nearly, if you like, get a borrow job. What would you say you've changed since you walked in the door? Not in yourself, but the football club. You gotta be honest, you know.
You feel like I'm just gonna sit here and pat myself on the back. But
no, you've got to listen. It's about being honest.
Yeah, and I've changed everything. To be honest, going back to the very start of it,
yeah,
Chesterfield gave me that that thirst for it. You know, I was still very much a player. I'd won player of the year before. I couldn't stay fit and healthy, which was a big problem.
Yeah.
And the club was relegated. And then I get this job just thrown at me for 3 games. But loved it. And then that summer, I applied for the Chesterfield job, didn't get it. They went for Martin Allen, who's obviously a lot more experienced than me.
Yeah.
They went down that route, no problems with that. So then I was sat on holiday, I was at a crossroads. What am I going to do? Am I going to carry on trying to play? Or now is my time to be a manager? And I genuinely thought, this is it, now is my time.
Mm.
My agent rang me up and said, Ian Barrow still haven't appointed anyone. You know, it might feel like it's the end of the earth to you. The training in Manchester, it's a blank canvas. They've got 4 or 5 players. Just if you apply for it, speak to the chairman, see what you think, and we'll go from there. I had a chat with, at the time it was still American owned.
Yeah.
So I had a chat with the guy who's actually from Barrow, who's the chairman, but lives in America now. I had an American son, who was the CEO, Andrew Cass. Had a chat with him over the phone. I was in Turkey on holiday. And just told him what I thought, how I thought it needed to be done. And everything he told me was, there's no professionals at the club. We are professional. We train every day, but there's no professionalism at the club. That's completely gone out the window. We've survived by a point the last game of the season when we lost at Chester at home. We were miles bottom of the league.
Yeah.
The whole club needs to change. I said, right, well, this is what I think. This is how it needs to be done. What do you think? Like,
and when you say, you know, elaborate a little bit on, and listen, we're not here to roast anybody else. We're just here to hear your story, you know. And I think it's a big thing to flash over, because you've obviously made massive changes to the place. And just in a broad context of, you know, recruitment or fitness or, you know, what?
So the first thing was training schedules. They needed to realise that you have to train like a professional football player, which means not just football work, but gym work as well. We are massively into the gym.
Yeah. Is that morning stuff before you go? Or?
No, so we'll have, they'll come in the morning at 9 o'clock. I always get them to sign in front of me, so I have a sign-in sheet, so I know they're in first and foremost, but also for that social contact.
Yeah.
The mental side of the game is huge now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're one of my players, you came and signed me, said morning, Gaffer, and we shake hands. I don't know how you are mentally. I don't know if you've slept well last night. I don't know if you've argued with your missus. That gives me that chance to have that conversation and say, how are you? Are you okay? Did you sleep well?
The one-on-one stuff.
The one-on-one stuff. Yeah. You know, that social contact is massive.
Not even about the game. Just about
just
sleep
life,
well. How's
life? Yeah, how's
bit of a joke. The stuff that, because people, you know, supporters sort of see you in a dugout. They see you maybe ranting and raving and see you doing a lot. I don't know how you are in a dugout.
Yeah,
but they don't. Yeah, me too. Yeah. But what I always try and struggle to get over to supporters is that's not the relationship for the vast majority of the time. Otherwise, nobody would play for anyone.
Yeah.
You have to have a relationship with each
player.
It's
that empathy, isn't it? Yes. Know, they have to understand that you care about them. And I genuinely do care about them. They'll all say that about me.
Yeah.
That the day-to-day stuff and the family is more important to me sometimes than the football side of the game, because if they're happy at home, I know they're happy at work.
Yeah.
So that contact gives me that.
Yeah.
Then on a normal day, they'll go into like a prehab session. Like, we can't afford to be having scans for injuries or loads of injuries. We carry a small squad.
Yeah.
So injury prevention is huge. They do that, then we'll go into a training.
So the bulletproof and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give us the best chance. Like, we're going to get injuries, but it gives us the best opportunity to avoid injuries. So then we'll go into a training schedule. You know.
And who sets that? You know, is that done with you and Peter?
Yeah, so the staff will meet in the morning, primarily before the players get in. We'll discuss what we're going to do. Like, this is the theme of the week. We play these on Saturday. This is what we need to do. Everything we do in training is based around how we play. You know, I've never understood managers, and I've played for them, that are very direct or whatever else, but they want to do possessions and tight games and training. What's the point? We don't play like that on a Saturday. So everything we do is based around, you know, how we play and what we do. It's all functional. Yeah, it's functional. So we'll do that, and then afterwards they have individual plans in the gym. You know, a lot of leg strengthening and core, you know. You spend football, upper body stuff is important, but not as important as your core stability and your legs.
Yeah.
And if you've got strong legs and you're fit and can overrun teams, it gives you that best chance.
Yeah.
So we're massively into that.
And if you're going to play the way you're playing, again, people will talk about it when you've got the ball. but you hard, you work harder when you, you know. I always look at teams that, that play like you know, look at Barcelona, look at Man City, look at the teams who play. I love watching them when they haven't got the ball.
Yeah, but that's just impressive.
It is. It is. If you watch impressive. it also tells you that you, this stuff is massive. You've got to be. Yeah. You've got to be proper fit to do
that,
this.
That gives you that belief and confidence to be able to do that. You know, the more work you do in the gym, and the bigger and stronger you look, and physically, you know, your body fat's down, your weight's down. It gives you that belief and confidence to say, you know what, I can. Like in possession, I can run and I can make angles, but out of possession, I can hunt and run and chase. And it just gives you that confidence and belief.
And on your session, and we'll stay on the football bit for a minute, on your sessions and how you set your team up, is Pep Guardiola, is that your God, if you like, in how they do things and how it's worked? And if it is, did you watch? How you know, you've done your coaching badges, but that gives you the driving license.
Yeah.
You've got to pick what car you're driving, exactly. If you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
So where did that information and knowledge come from for yourself?
Yes, again, I am very much a student. You know, I watch documentaries, not just on football, and other sports as well, coaching. Big into American sports, American football.
Yeah.
You know, their coaches, how they, you know, speak to players, interact with players, teach them the certain drills and topics. I take in as much information as I can. In terms of the way we play, yeah, like Pep is a huge influence on me, but there has to be, we're not just passing for the sake of it. Yes, we are possession based. Yes, we want to play out from the back, but there has to be with a purpose. Has to be with a purpose. There has to be a means to an end. You know, if teams are, we're going, you know, at the minute we're playing three at the back, so we've got our three centre halves inside the box to receive the ball, and the deep line midfield player going to get it. But if they're pressing four or five onto us, then where's the space?
Exactly.
You know, and it's recognising that space.
Yeah.
And we're not afraid to go, you know, bang, boom, go to my two centre forwards.
Yeah. You know, stretch again.
There we go. Yeah, it's just recognising it and having different strings to your bow.
Yes, and you and Pete would work on that in training. That's a big... So, and just, and I don't want to... Listen, you're not going to show me all your cards anyway. No manager would. But would you chink and move about when you move things in your own team? When you like, so I'm interviewing you Friday night before you play Barnet. Will you work on when they have it? So do you work a lot on the other side out of possession? If you understand what I mean.
Yeah, we do analysis videos on the opposition. We won't really work technically and functionally on the opposition. We are very much, we'll do what we do. If we do it to the best of our abilities, then it will back us to beat the opposition. However, we will highlight strengths and weaknesses of the opposition and say, right, this is maybe what we need to do out of possession.
Yeah.
We're very much at this level, no disrespect to National League players.
Yeah.
But if we can get pressure on the ball all over the pitch, 9 times out of 10 you're going to win it back, because technically they're not good enough to be able to beat the press.
Yeah.
Yes, we work on pressure, but it's the same for us every week. We are full press, high press, all over the pitch. That 6 second rule that Pep talks about, give the ball away, you go and hunt. It's that disappointment that I had to coach out the players. You know, how many times you see a player give the ball away and it's like arms in the air. That's the second's gone. You've got to forget it. No reaction to adversity, just bang, go, press.
Well, if you're going to play the way you're playing, you're going to give the ball away, you're going to make mistakes, that's part of it. Now, the big question for me is, and it's brilliant to be able to sit here, you know, we're in early February, you know, listen, you've everything to do, but you're in a great position. But the word I've wrote down here is when. It's all right to say now, and the lads have all bought into it now, but when was it on the table? Like, how soon did you put this on the table, and when did they buy into it?
So, yeah, I mean...
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, so the first training session we're doing, just a simple... We do a possessions, like a circle, like a rondo kind of thing. And the players can string two or three passes together. You know, me and Peter looking at each other, we've got all these great ideas, but wow, they can't even pass the ball. 6 weeks later, we scored a goal where we had 24 passes and scored... In the league, so
through the training field, do you think?
Through training field, just literally giving them confidence, belief, constantly working on possession, detail, like passing drills, but it's, you know, people go, it's not just a waste time, it's the detail of the pass, what foot to hit, yeah, the weight of, yeah, pass,
where
the angle of receiving, yeah, the ball,
safe,
yeah, etc. Yeah. And constantly doing that and working on the shape. I prefer 4-3-3, always have. However, that changed, and we can speak about that.
Yeah.
But yet, all of a sudden, the players are seeing it working. They're getting belief from keeping the ball, and it was just
you're talking about the start of this season, the start of whatever that.
That was as soon as I came in, so that was
walked in the
start
door.
Of
yeah.
Last season, yeah.
Yeah. And so, and you feel it's been an upward spiral.
I've had to, you know, I'm not just re-educating the players, because, yeah, a lot of them wouldn't have ever played that way. It was re-educating the whole of the town, the whole of the football club.
Yeah.
You know, they've been used to seeing, no disrespect to other managers, but proper direct football.
Yeah.
And, you know, the amount of times fans are like, get it in the box.
Yeah.
You know, get it forward, whatever else. And I'm looking back and I'm thinking, like, they've got four defenders all over 6 foot.
And you,
my strikers are 5 foot 5, 5 foot,
yeah,
6. Why would I throw it in the box in the air?
Yeah.
I'm just going to give the ball away. We have to find another way. And then all of a sudden they started seeing it working. Obviously, results help build confidence.
Well, I think they're massive. Aren't they? They're massive. And they started to come with what you did. But I think also, and to go back to you as a, like you personally, it's all right to give off all of this stuff. But you need the results as well for your confidence, don't you? You know, you know, I always talk to managers about their downtime, but you ain't had much at the minute. Everything's been a roller. You know, it's all been on the way up, hasn't it? You know.
Yeah, there was a spell last season where we lost 6 on the trot, and that was testing.
Yeah. What does that do to you as a person? I don't mean you. I don't mean generally. I'm not talking about. We all know what it does to a manager generally. So, what did it do to you?
It was hard. You know, lack of sleep. Am I getting this right? Am I going about this the right way?
Taking home with you.
We were dominating games. We were just conceding bad goals, getting done with set pieces, as National League's big on set pieces.
Yeah.
And I was just wrecking my brain and wrecking. And I was stubborn at first. You know, maybe after 3 games, I should have changed it and gone, do you know what? And I'll talk about what I did after that.
Yeah.
But I let it go. And there was another game, and it went to 6. And I had to give off this confidence. And, you know, when you step in front of players, as you know, and you speak in front of players, you have to become this beacon of light. And you have to stand there and, regardless of what's in your own head, just portray confidence and give the players confidence. And that was the hardest part. You know, I was doubting myself, no doubt.
And I get that. And I used to say to my mates, you know, Ricky Gervais, who'd do the presentation he does the BAFTAs or whatever he does, because we're actors at times. There's times when we have to front, when we're not feeling, you know. So I want to talk a little bit more about that stuff, because I don't think supporters get it all the time. I think supporters think that we're bulletproof, and we're not really, you know. And I've spoke to each manager about it, and you know, Steve Baker at Harrow said they get relegated and then because of what had happened, they didn't go down. And he sent me the mill. It actually made a mill. He was like under the doctor with it.
Yeah.
But nobody gets to know that stuff. Now, what I'm saying to you is that in that period, you know, when you're doubting yourself, obviously, 2 things. One, tell me a little bit about how that is when you go away from the football club, when you go home.
You don't switch off, do you?
No.
So you're constantly thinking, what can I do differently? Am I doing enough? Am I spending enough time at work? Then you get home, you're in bad moods with your wife, you're in bad moods with the kids, you know, and they're constantly saying, it'll turn, it'll change, it'll be fine, don't worry, stay positive, but stick to your beliefs. My wife's brilliant with that, you know, there's no doubt about it. She is a massive...
She's probably grown up with the whole, obviously, not grown up, but she's...
had to move around everywhere, and she's always been there for me.
Yeah.
And it was always, you'll get it right, you've got a great football brain, you'll figure a way out, you'll sort it out.
But it's a dark place at times, isn't it?
It is a dark place, and there's times where, you know, you don't want that next game to come because you fear for it, and you're fearing the result, and you're fearing what might happen.
Absolutely. And people don't, but you can't never show that stuff.
No.
That's the point I'm getting to, and we're all the same. I mean, I you know, just personally, people said, you're tired, why'd you retire? I said, listen, if I could be a football manager until 10 to 3, and then go home.
Yeah.
I'd never leave the game.
Yeah.
But people don't understand what we go through when we walk in that little dugout.
Yeah.
And the other thing you're talking about at home, Danny Cowley said to me once, his wife called it the football cloud, because she'd be talking to him and Danny would be on a different planet.
Yeah.
And again, surely you can identify
100%. That. And we came to a point last season where there was a rule, you know, after 7 o'clock, our phones are off, you know.
Yeah.
You have to have that time with us and with the kids where we get you back, you know.
And that was a family decision.
Yeah.
And you must agree.
It's the best thing that I could
do. Well, do you know, I hope other managers listen to this, because I think it's a must. It's a must. You have to get away from it, don't you?
Your own mental health is vital.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I started doing that, I felt fresh the next day. You know, I slept better. The family had me back as a dad and as a husband. Yeah. And it was massive for our family. And massive for my own mental health, that I could just go, do you know what? I'm back in this the next day.
Yeah.
I'm ready to work again.
Yeah.
It's only 2 or 3 hours, but it makes a massive difference.
And your staff in this, Peter, well, not your staff, Peter more than that relationship with him must be big then, you know, when you're in your dark days. And listen, I'm only going to do 10 minutes because you haven't had many dark days. Believe me, you've had a real ride to the top.
Yeah.
But that relationship as a you and your assistant, because he's going through the same stuff really, isn't he? You know, and tell me a little bit about the 2 years in that period.
So we'd obviously discuss, you know, Peter was very much like, you know, it's strange because he's older than me and I have so much respect for him as a man and as who he is as a man, but also what he achieved in his playing career. He also said, Gaffer, like, don't worry, you've seen this, look at the stats, look at this, look at that, just believe in it, it'll change. And it went 3 games, 4 games, 5 games, 6 games. And then he started, you know. And then I made a massive conscious decision to go, Pete, we're doing this.
And what was
literally going
that?
3 at the back
yeah.
to get an extra, because our weakness was set pieces. And we were getting physically dominated. So I had to find a way of getting an extra marker and an extra big body on the pitch. So 3 at the back gave me that extra centre-half.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, then we went 12, 13 games unbeaten.
So talk. Listen, I've got your noose around your neck. Worried. Yeah. Talk about that, then. Talk about the euphoria that the trying to, because you have to try and keep that even playing, don't you? And to come out of the dark days, to, you know. Talk me a little bit about through how that is.
Yeah. So you obviously, weirdly enough, and this season and last season, we were on a horrendous run at the start of this season. And a horrendous run during the middle part of last season. And both games we had all shot. Last season we beat them 2-0 away from home, changed everything.
Yeah.
This season we beat them 2-1, they missed a penalty in the last minute, changed everything. You know, that one moment changed everything.
Yeah.
And it was just weird how it both, you know, started with all shot. But then you obviously get that result, and then you go into another game and you get that result, and then your confidence and the whole place just starts to lift. But then you have to manage expectations.
It becomes the other,
side
of the coin. Because supporters are going
to... What makes us this team? What gives us this right to win games?
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to get that balance right. Really hard. But I love it as well. It's so addictive.
I think it is the biggest drug, isn't it? It's the biggest drug. And I get that. And you've explained it really well because... And the one thing that I've got beneficial over you is this is about the 5th one of these I've done at different levels, you know, and, you know, the top, because you're top of the nice now. But the formula's the same.
Yeah.
The guys go through the same stuff. They feel the same way. And it's nearly good for managers because it's a lonely place at times, isn't it? No matter how good your staff are or your family are, it's a real lonely place. But what comes out of these that I've found is that we all get there. We're all in there. So if we're all in there, we're all doing something sort of right. So anyway, to go back, so you go 3 at the back, and it turns round, and now you've took off.
So we were getting results, but the football side of me wasn't happy because we weren't dictating possession like I was 4-3-3. So all the time I'm looking... How can we be better with the ball in this shape? What can we do? And it basically came down to the start of that season, I had four players in July, like I spoke to you about.
Yeah, yeah.
So I recruited, I got, you know, some of them really paid off, but I recruited out of really the scraps that everyone else had left behind.
And just to pause on that, recruitment, that's massive.
The biggest part of football.
Yeah. And is, oh, and if, and again, everybody's in the same boat. So you be honest with this one. How much of this recruitment was good and how much of it was lucky? Because we've all been lucky.
The first season, I would say it was more luck than
judgment, if you want.
Yeah, because I didn't have any time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I got the job at the end of June. We had four players. Pre-season started on the 1st of July. I had to get bodies in the building.
Yeah. And talk a little bit about for supporters about, sorry to interrupt you, about how you do, because you have to make a million phone calls, you have to go through your knowledge and your contacts. So just a little sort of 5 minutes about how that's done.
So for me, I was very fortunate in terms of I played at the top level all the way down to League Two. So I built up a massive network of all different levels.
It's massive.
And, and I've always been a really good, primarily I think I'm a really good guy. So I never burn bridges with people. I'm always friendly.
This interview's young, by the way. Yeah. That could change.
But I can pick up the phone to anybody.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm just trying to get as much information as I can, and then I'll go on Y Scout all these and watch clip after clip after clip after clip, and I have an idea in my mind what we need for certain positions, but without physically seeing them or having the time to see them at that stage, it was a gamble, a huge gamble. You know, players like John Rooney, that you know, had been relegated with Guiseley, had moved around clubs. He's ended up getting 11 goals last season for centre midfield. He's on 20 as it stands.
Yeah,
for centre midfield. You know, so that was more luck than judgment. However,
but what comes after that ain't luck. My mate who's just left Wimbledon, Simon Bassi, calls it, you know, the scout, and trying to, he calls it signing a player. He says you sort of look at him through a letterbox.
Yeah,
you know, you have to take a chance with that. Yeah. You know, and he's right, but I think it's one thing to be lucky and getting the player initially, but I think what you do with them after that is luck.
And again, not slagging any other manager off, but the amount of times I've heard after games, we love to play your way, and I haven't got the players. Well, hang on a minute, your budget's three times what mine is.
Yeah.
Just sign footballers. If you want to play football, sign footballers. If you don't, then don't.
Don't be scared.
And but then you need to believe, work on them, improve them, coach them, teach them. Yeah. And that's what I think myself and Peter have done more than anything else, that we've given them this belief and a structure and a foundation where once they're getting results playing that way as well, that you just see different.
Yeah, you see different. And it wasn't as if you've signed them all knowing exactly who they are and what they are and what they do. So you're brave to go that way with them, you know? But so we'll take that box and we'll say you're doing all right. And it's
but this season was completely different.
Yeah.
Because I knew from last season where we needed to improve and what I needed to improve. And I knew in April who I wanted to sign. And we went out and we might not have the biggest budget in the world.
Okay, fine. Brilliant. Sorry to interrupt you again. Because you, and every manager does it, you're going on that five, the guys in after the game, the 5 minutes. I want the 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. When you say you knew who you wanted to sign, you don't have to go into names or whatever. You can if you want. But how did you know? How did you find out? How did you fit? Do you understand? A wee bit more depth to that.
I think I basically just worked the league out. So I understood what we needed to compete better in terms of the physicality side of the game, the physical aspect. You know, there's a lot of physical teams in the National League. So I needed a centre forward who could deal with the physical side, but could also play football the way we want to play. Now, they're hard to come by.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I spent hours watching films, clips, going out to see players.
See, this is the thing, I always get on supporters' cases, you know, because we get a hard time sometimes off supporters. And I this is why I wanted this a little bit more, because people think you finish your training, go home, go and play golf, have a couple of beers and go to bed. You know, they do. They absolutely do. And I think it's important that they know this. So carry on. But this is my... Yes.
So, like I said, that's hard to find at this level.
Yeah.
So obviously we signed Scott Quigley. Now, everyone looked at Scott's record. He didn't really have much of a goal record. He'd gone to Blackpool, never played. Went on loan to Halifax, played but didn't really score, was in and out of the team.
Yeah.
But I saw something in Scott. I saw that big 6'3", physically dominant lad, could roll defenders, could run. But I also saw he could shoot off both feet. He was tidy in possession. Now I went to the chairman and said, "Chairman, we need a centre forward. This is what I need. We need to offer this lad three years. I said, "Chairman, our maximum is X amount.
Yeah.
Other people are paying 2-3 times that. So to get him on board, we need to give him something different.
Stability.
Which is security.
Yeah, yeah.
So just trust me with this, will you please?
Yeah.
Let me do this." And he backed me with it. So all the fans, we announced it. Scott Quigley signs three-year contract.
Yeah.
How are we giving a three-year contract? This isn't sustainable. What are we doing? What are we thinking? You know, 9 games in a season gone. This season we're on 7 points. Scott's hardly scored. What have we done? He's got it completely wrong.
Yeah.
Etc. Well, now we're sat here, he's top scorer in the league. Yeah. On the top of the league.
And they're saying, you know, send him on a 5-year
exactly,
deal. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm
dealing with that's tough at times.
Yeah.
But I think, listen, I think with supporters that, as much as I get into them a wee bit now I've retired, they pay their money, they're entitled to their opinion. Sometimes it annoys you, it irritates you, but most of the time they'll be down here tomorrow. They'll have travelled a long way to watch you, you know. But you just came over something, and I wrote it down earlier, and I'm always interested in relationships, you know, between the gaffer and the chairman.
Yeah.
And they're vital relationships. And I know, I'm telling you this because you're new at it. They are massive, the relationship. Talk me a little bit about your experience with your chairman so far.
I touched on it earlier about the American guys.
That's why I want to get back to it. Yeah.
That was tough. Now, I wouldn't be sat here today if they were still in charge. I firmly believe that.
Yeah. What? Why?
There was no personal relationship. I'm very much, you know, sit down in front of you. I'll be honest, completely straight. You can be completely straight with me. There'll be no judgment, no grudges held. But men,
yeah,
talk it out like men. I'm a people's person. But when it comes down to sending emails, you know, a bit keyboard warrior-y, like, you know, what about this and this? I'm not happy with this.
And were they at the games? Did they actually go to the game? Were they at the games? Yeah?
The son was, but he didn't have any idea of football.
Yeah.
He grew up in America. No disrespect to him, but football and the English football, and especially the National League and the lower leagues, you need to have an understanding of it.
It's a massive relationship, though, isn't it?
Huge.
Between you and so, how did that finish, or what happened? Take me through that.
So, I started having worry. I mean, we had this conversation again, talking about professionalism.
Yeah.
So then I'm coming to him for GPS. You know, we haven't got the money for GPS. Well, hang on a minute, Mr. Chairman. You told me you wanted professionalism. Like, this is the way I want to do things. So I then had to ring round literally all of the supporters' trusts and beg for the money from their, you know, their trust, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of them, the National Supporters Club, said, "We'll buy it." Yeah.
Brilliant.
Which was great. Perfect. So they paid for that. But then I'm talking about, obviously, supplements, protein, recovery drinks. You know. And I remember, never forget it, he sent me an email once and I was asking for certain things. Not excessive.
Yeah.
Ian, this is non-league. You might not be used to this, but anything other than a kit and a pitch is a bonus.
Is this, well, from America somewhere?
From America somewhere, yeah. And I turned to my wife and said, "Read this." I said, I cannot deal with this. You know, he sold me a dream, and now I'm in the job and I'm trying.
Yeah.
He's preventing me from doing it properly.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just, because we've all had a little, I've been very fortunate in my career, only one bad chairman, and I've slaughtered him enough without renaming him again.
Yeah.
But this is because there's a time you can't be public with this. There's your guys coming in. You can't go public with this stuff, can you? Or suppose you can do it at some stage, but it's that holding off on letting everybody know the score, isn't it?
Well, at the end of the day, he's still your boss.
Yeah.
So you have to show him respect. And, you know, I would never have gone back and said, I might say, "I think you're getting this wrong, Mr. Chairman. Like, we need this, and this is why we need it." And I'll give him, as he's American, the massive on stats, I'll give him facts and figures as to back up my argument. But then it's his decision, and then you cannot go out to the press and say, he's prevented me from doing this.
You feel that, don't you?
But you want
Absolutely, we do, yeah.
You want to tell the truth. So that relationship starts by Dan, but it kind of, it snowballed really quickly because I just figured it out that they'd run out of money and it was a costing. Yeah. And he was literally just trying to scrape every penny together to make sure the lads were paid on time.
Yeah.
But everything else was, we still got money. So we got beat by Chorley at part of that 6-game run when it was the FA Cup. We were 2-0 up at half time. The club massively reliant on this money.
Need the money, yeah.
Massively reliant. We got beat 3-2.
We've all been there, no?
Yeah.
They're
at half time, he's counting the money.
Yeah.
End of the game, it's gone. So 2 days later, I get an email saying his dad and him are pulling the money out of the club. One of the directors, a local businessman, Paul Hornby, was trying to get investors together to take over the club.
Yeah.
Paul Hornby rings me. He's an accountant by trade. Says, Ian, don't worry. Do not worry. Like, I love what you're trying to do. I see what you're trying to do. Yeah. I'm going to get together investors. I've already got them lined up. It's going to be fine. We're going to take over. There'll be no hiccups, none of this. We're going to have this personal relationship. Everything will work out fine. And wow, did it. And that's where I got lucky again.
Yeah.
The support and trust I had of him, bearing in mind we just lost 6 games on the trot.
And he's still backing you.
Was incredible.
Yeah. And were you on a contract at this stage?
Yeah.
For how long?
I was on a contract. I signed a 2-year contract.
Yeah.
No.
When's it up?
No, since I've signed three or four contracts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it would have been easy at that point to just go, do you know what, this isn't working out.
Yeah.
But he saw what I was trying to do. He saw my ideas. He saw the way the team was performing.
Because he's
there. We weren't getting results because he's there.
Yeah.
And he just went, I love this. Let's just carry on. And then since then, we've just...
And is he now the chairman?
He's the chairman now.
So the relationship now is different.
There's 4 or 5 local businessmen. Mm-hmm. They're in the consortium. They're all different characters. They all bring something different to the table. But it's open, it's honest.
Yeah.
It's a proper relationship where we can sit down in a room and they all listen to me and then they might agree or disagree, but we all sit down and we get on really well. That's a
real rarity because, I mean, most of my career, I albeit not being in the nice now, the conference, the nice now, we can call that name, but I would only deal with the chairman.
Yeah.
I would speak to all other members of the board, but it was made plain from day one, I'll speak to you all, but I'm only dealing with him, because it's hard enough to deal with him without dealing with you. So if you're in a situation where you can deal with them all in a room, then it doesn't come around that often again. And I suppose when you're top of the league by 6 or 7 points, then it's proof that it's working.
Well, they all have their own questions, you know. They all have their ideas of the game.
Yeah.
And Paul is very placid, the chairman's so placid, you know, his accountant is safe, you know, he doesn't want to, he doesn't like confrontation, you know, and he'll be the first to admit that, whereas there's others that have a bit of a background of football, which are like, well, why are you doing this, why are you doing that, and then I'm having to explain that to them.
Sometimes that's good for you though, when it's good to explain
it. I'm passionate about
it,
because I'll happily sit down and say, well, this is why I'm doing this, these are the stats, as I said. First, you know, everyone backed us for the playoffs in the summer. I really fancied us for the playoffs. However, Barrow being where it is and the little club it is, we were being written off from everyone outside of Barrow. Yeah. But inside that bubble, we all had massive belief. And then 9 games into the season, we had 7 points. You know, and I'm sat in a room with them again, saying, listen, just...
What were they expecting off you?
They were expecting us to be challenging at the top. We weren't paying that money. We weren't, but they just believed in me and they believed what I was saying.
So playoffs minimum.
Yeah, not playoffs. They'd have been buzzing with playoffs.
Yeah, playoffs.
But they wanted top us half. In and around.
But
as I said, 9 games in, 7 points on the board in the bottom four. Easy to
in
panic.
In a tough league.
Easy to panic.
Change your style. Change what you do.
And I'm going. they called me into a meeting and I'm going through all the stats, saying this.
Did you ever doubt, sorry to interrupt, because I'm really curious on it, because I'd be one of them who would hit the channel at that because of just wasn't brave enough. Did you doubt it? You must doubt it. No?
Not this season.
No. Even
because I knew we'd improved.
Yeah.
And that's weird. And it's strange to be saying that to you.
But, well, they're small margins, aren't they?
But I knew as a group and as a team we'd improved. We had better players. We were dominating games more. We were just making mistakes in both boxes.
Yeah.
Now, again, that coincided with the 4-3-3 changing to back to 3-4-1-2 again.
Yeah.
And again, that moment at Aldershot we spoke about. I mean,
yes.
Since then, week before Tuesday, we'd lost one game since September the 3rd. And that game, John Rooney got sent off. We was never sent off, got rescinded. We wouldn't have lost that game. So the upturn in results is crazy.
Yeah. And I think we've about 10 minutes and I've really enjoyed it. It's been excellent so far. But so we go into the, we've 10 minutes left. Okay. So we're going into the back nine. You're a golfer on a Sunday. And you're going into the back nine on a Sunday as far as your football season is concerned. And you're in a place where I would say that even the most experienced manager would be edgy about. It's a natural instinct. And I know, listen, you don't have to tell me you've got belief in it. But tell me where you are with it mentally as to how you're going to, if you say one game at a time, I'm going to the bar. But it is a little bit like, and I agree, but tell me where your philosophy is now. Game, expectation from within your dressing room, the players, all that sort of picture, if you know what I mean.
I mean, look, I'm a very confident person, and you probably played this back to me in May, and I might have egg on my face, but I firmly believe we'll do it. Firmly believe it. There isn't a doubt in my mind. Yeah. There isn't, because I know we're the best team. Now, again, some people might say that's arrogance. I don't think it is.
Listen, who cares?
I don't think it is.
Who cares? Are you telling me that people who sit in a dugout on a Saturday at any level aren't arrogant or don't have egos? We all have.
Yeah.
Whether you're quiet, I'm a bit blurry, as you might have guessed. You know, you're a big lad yourself. So I have no. What I like the fact that you can go, yeah, I think we'll win it. You didn't even say think, did you?
No, I know.
Yeah.
And I do know.
And how do you portray that in the dressing room? Because there's a line as well. There's a line where you're overconfident. Talk to me a wee bit about how you are at the moment with the guys and where
I think I'm very much like this. I make them understand it. Look, if you don't win this league, we've underachieved because you are the best team in this league. Now, you might question that, but I'm not talking about where we are now. I'm going back previous 50, 60 games. You know, last season, the end of last season, from Christmas onwards to now, we've got the most points out of any team. So this isn't a flash in the pan. This isn't, you know, just this season. This has been building for a long time now. And if you can't gain belief from that and gain belief from how you're performing on the pitch, doing what you're doing to other teams, the messages you get from other managers, other fans, you know, the amount of managers, what a team, like, we love watching you play. You know, going back to Matt at Sutton, that you spoke about earlier, he spoke to a reporter from The Athletic, a really big, media company, all the best journalists apparently work for this company. They rang me out of the blue and said, Matt said, the way you play football is miles above non-league. You know, we need to come and watch what you do and see what you do. So they spent 2 or 3 days with me last week. And people like Matt, who are respected in the game.
He's straight-laced. He's a straight guy. And I used to get irritated by people who wouldn't say how good my team were.
Yeah.
I used to irritate me. Why don't you tell the truth, you know?
And this is the thing, going back to that ego thing.
Yeah.
You listen, I listen to every single manager's pre-match interview. I listen to every single manager's post-match interview just to try and gain advantage.
Yeah.
Just to gain that 1%.
Yeah.
Gain the 1%.
Yeah.
And the amount of managers that will say to me in my office something completely different to what to say to their own person, fans, and I get why they do it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah,
I understand it.
Yeah.
But it's just chalk and cheese, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, Hess was great the other night. I mean, they beat us. We should have won the game 4-5-1, and he'd be the first to admit that. But he said, "Do not worry. Do not worry. You're the best in the league. You will win the league."
Yeah.
Just hearing that, just just gives you that confidence and belief.
Absolutely, yeah. And sort of going in, because tomorrow's a different ball game. It's a trophy, and who doesn't want to play at Wembley? You know, the pleasure of it last year
and
myself.
I've said that to the players. You know? I played at Wembley 5 times. You know, yeah. Well, after tomorrow, they're two rounds away from Wembley. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say to you is, you know, you hear the old one. Well, you know, we need to concentrate in the league, or we need to play our squad players in a trophy, or to talk me. So tomorrow's another game for you. Any difference in how you're approaching it?
Yeah, so we will rotate. Yeah. But again, we've got a small squad and we treat everybody the same. So these lads have had the same coaching as what everyone else has. Yeah. They understand the system, the philosophy. Yeah. Because of the small squad, they've all played a lot of games. So we're not necessarily weaker. It's just different. And it's getting them to believe that, and they do believe that.
Yeah.
We go into every game to win now. I'm not one of these managers that will try and set up for a draw away from home. We try and win every single game, and I try and give that belief to the players, and they've got that belief. Whether they're in the league team every week or they're not, you know, John Rooney, Scott Quigley haven't travelled with us here. You know, they've scored 37, 38 goals between them. I don't think that makes any difference to them.
No, and I think you've also got to manage your players, so if they need a rest, then they need a rest. Yeah. And if you need a rest, might bring them a 300-mile coach journey.
Or just at Dover, we've had Bournemouth, yeah. That's all. We've had 3 away games, long away games in the space of 2 weeks.
And just, you know, on the squad, will you look to, because you're in a big position now, have you been in the term to go, like, I want to add the numbers?
The money's there.
But he's
talking, but I, at the moment, will find it very difficult to better what I have. Now, I'm not willing to bring someone in and gamble with the club's finances.
Yeah.
You know, I'm quite good economically as well. I understand budgets. I understand the club have pushed the boat out to keep me here. You know, there has been interest from other clubs.
Yeah, and there will continue to be.
And I don't want to gamble with the money just by bringing another body in for the sake of it. If I bring someone in, it will be to make us better. At the minute, I find that hard. So I'm sitting tight. If everyone stays in one piece, I'm more than happy.
Yeah.
Don't, then we'll have to make a decision. We're not governed by the window, so
you can do it all the way until March. Yeah, yeah.
Instant decision. For now.
And have you always got a list?
Always.
Yeah.
I'm always watching players.
Yeah. So you know,
getting ready for next season.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
In my head, I already know how we need to improve again.
Yes.
And I'm always looking and always working. You can't. You know yourself. You cannot stand still in football.
No, because if you stand still, you're going backwards.
The minute you think you've cracked it, you fall flat on your ass.
Yeah.
You know,
I've been there a couple of times and all, let me tell you. Yeah.
It'd be easy for me now to sit here and come out, I've cracked it. We're 7 points clear at the top of the National League with a budget that's probably in the bottom 6-7. You know, I must be brilliant. No. It's hard work that has got me to this point, and I'll keep working hard. I have a ridiculous appetite for the game. I love the game.
I think everybody at this level is good. Some are brilliant. And then the ones who are brilliant need to work their backsides off.
Yeah.
And if they do that, then they can end up at the top of the division. And and enjoy your sleep tonight, because you're going to have to do the same thing tomorrow. Because that is what it is.
Yeah.
But you seem to feed off that, Ian.
I've always been one, you know, I was 6'3", as I said, quite a technical player, never the quickest, struggled with pace. Got written off by so many people, not good enough to play at the top level. Went on one player of the year. I love it. I love being written off. You know, Chesterfield didn't give me that manager's job. So I'm going to prove to you I'm the best manager. That's my mentality. That's my mindset. You know, I'm going to show you. You know, people told me, oh, you can't get out of this league playing football. Okay, then I'm going to show you that I can.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way I'm built.
It's brilliant. And we're coming down, it's been great. What's brilliant is your whole psyche has changed, your whole attitude and who you are has changed through the interview.
Yeah.
Because the more you talk about football, the more hyped, not hyped, that's the wrong word, the more passionate you've sounded and it comes out. So I've nearly got the guy who's in the dressing room now.
Yeah.
You know, I've got that, which is brilliant, because people will hear that, you know. And for me, with 2 minutes to go, where does it take you? So, win the league, great. I'm bringing that you think you're going to win the league, and I think that's a positive thing. So win the league and you take Barrow into the Football League, yeah. When do you, and it's hypothetical because the chairman's listening, when do you think yourself have stretched this piece of elastic as far as you can stretch it? And I've met you for an hour, and I know that you don't want to stop here.
No,
talk to me through that.
I want to be at the highest level I can. The chairman knows and understands that.
Yeah.
but I don't think I've got to the bottom of Barrow yet. The Football League, I have a young team, you know, the average age of my team is under 24. I think they can improve again, and I see us competing in League Two. Now, it might not get to that stage, you know. I'm not naive enough to think that if I keep winning games, yeah, there's not going to be a big fish that comes and swims and not makes me an offer I can't refuse. The chairman understands that as well. Yeah. But as it stands, you know, my biggest priority is getting Barrow into the Football League and then going again. And I genuinely believe I can do that.
Yeah, well, listen, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate your time. I would say it's been a real insight. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for your honesty.
You. Cheers, appreciate it.
Ian, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA.